Continuing education is more essential and more strategically valuable than ever. The old model of front-loaded education is no longer viable. Today's learners need relevant and flexible CE to keep pace.
And we have a free resource to help your learning business provide that kind of high-impact learning. The Strategic CE Playbook introduces a practical framework to help you strategically design and deliver continuing education programs that will succeed in today's complex and competitive market.
The playbook focuses on three essential levers: personalization, portfolio thinking, and performance.
To learn more about the three levers and how to use them effectively, get your copy of the Strategic CE Playbook at leadinglearning.com/strategic-CE. If you want to grow the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
In this episode, number 445, we talk with Aaron Presley, Senior Vice President of Education, Training, and Events at the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association, or NRECA for short. Aaron has worked in associations for well over 20 years, and she's passionate about serving members and making money while doing it, and those are her exact words.
Well, nothing wrong with making money. It certainly jives with our focus at Leading Learning Antigoras on helping learning businesses improve their reach, revenue, and impact. But we also know that some learning businesses, especially associations or other organizations that may be nonprofits, they can shy away from focusing on money. They prefer, and probably understandably, to focus on the mission and on serving learners, but without talking so much about money. But of course, we know that for an organization like NRECA, the revenue it brings in through its learning products and services is really crucial to being able to deliver on its mission and serve its learners well. So that old, you know, no money, no mission saying.
Absolutely right, Jeff. And that's one of the things that Aaron brings up in our conversation. She's really clear on that connection between making money and delivering on mission.
Very good. So what else do you and Aaron talk about, Salisa?
We talk about what NRECA does in general and what it offers in its portfolio, but we spend most of our time talking about culture. When Aaron started at NRECA, she consciously chose to focus on shifting the culture in her team. And spoiler alert, part of that focus is about being more open about the need to make money. We also get into the challenges and opportunities on Aaron's mind when she thinks about the next year or two. And I ask Aaron about her approach to her own learning and professional development.
And I believe Aaron also offers three takeaways near the end of your conversation.
Yes, she does. She mentions the importance of not sleeping on culture, of embracing a test and learn mindset, and of recognizing the reality of the need for revenue.
Excellent. So as you listen to this conversation, dear listener, keep those three things in mind. And now on to the conversation with Aaron Presley.
So tell us about NRECA, what it does in general, and then maybe a sketch of what it offers in terms of learning opportunities.
Sure. NRECA is National Rural Electric Cooperative Association. So we represent the 900 rural electric cooperatives that are scattered across the United States in sometimes very small rural communities of only hundreds of people, but also kind of the rural suburbs of Austin, Texas, for example. And we really make sure and advocate as a trade association, make sure that our members' interests are front and center with legislators, but we also look to equip and educate our members on issues of real importance to them, the increasing load on electric grids, hiring and retaining folks in rural communities, AI, and really overall, the big umbrella is making sure that they can continue to provide safe, affordable, and reliable electricity to their rural communities.
So I'm thinking in what I'm hearing about your audience there, that that's a potentially a pretty broad group, I mean, certainly geographically dispersed, but then also probably the roles. So, I mean, talk a little bit about your portfolio and how you try to serve those different members that you serve.
Sure. I think most trade associations probably have this challenge, right? You represent an industry, and within that industry, as you said, there's lots of different roles and responsibilities. And so from an education standpoint, we have events and training for CEOs, communicators, IT folks, engineering folks, membership folks, up and coming emerging leaders. We also serve boards of directors that govern all of these electric cooperatives. And so we're also teaching a lot of governance and education to these boards of directors. And so that education can take the shape of events. We do about 20 to 25 live events across the country every year. And then we have probably 8 to 10 kind of week-long cohort-based in-person education experiences. Sometimes we partner with University of Wisconsin. We also partner with Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University to deliver those programs. And then we probably have, you know, well over 100 online programs, sometimes live, sometimes self-paced on demand through a learning management system that folks can engage with. So lots of content across lots of platforms for lots of different people.
Well, thanks for spelling that out a bit in terms of just, yeah, that breadth of what you offer at NRCA in terms of the learning opportunities. So when we think about your role at NRECA, how do you define it or describe your role?
I'm grateful and lucky now to be leading a really amazing team. And that's my job number one, right, is to grow and cultivate this team, to give them and help kind of point them in the right direction and give them this vision, but then to really get out of their way and let them do what they do best. If I've hired right and if we've coached right, you know, we have an amazing group of folks whose job is to execute on all the things I just talked about. And so I sometimes say I'm like their Sherpa, right? We're climbing up this big mountain and I'm their Sherpa to help kind of get them there. But they're also doing a lot of the work and hopefully I'm going to get them to the top of that mountain and we're going to deliver some really good stuff for our members.
And so you're focused on learning at NRECA. Refresh my memory. I mean, how long have you been sort of focused on learning and how did you wind up kind of with that focus in your professional life?
Interesting, because I would say the bulk of my career, you know, I've been working for, dare I say, well over 30 years. The bulk of my career was in media and publishing. And I spent probably 2/3 of my career in that space. At my last association, there was an opportunity. Our VP of education had departed. And I thought, hey, you know, I'm used to dealing with content. I'm used to thinking about what an audience wants. I'm used to kind of educating and informing. It just happens to be in the pages of a magazine or, you know, online or in a newsletter. Why can't I apply many of those skills and that kind of passion for delivering good information to an audience, maybe in a different format, on a main stage, in an education session, in a, you know, a day-long workshop? And so I kind of raised my hand and I said, hey, I think I can do this job too. And so that was really this pivot point for me in my career. I'd been very focused on content and generating revenue from that content. And now I expanded that into the education space where I am generating content and driving revenue for that content. So I think that pivot was really important. And I think some of the experience I bring from the media side and the revenue generation side has really helped enhance some of the work that we do here in NRECA on the education side.
And how long have you been at NRECA at this point?
2.5 years. So not that long in the grand scheme of things. As an association person, I'm still very new to NRECA. I know most association folks often stay with their associations for years. So I'm looking forward to doing that here, though.
And I know that one of the things you chose to focus on when you joined NRECA is culture. So what sort of led you to sort of focus on culture and say, this is where I really want to kind of dig in as I'm starting my role here?
Yeah, I was very lucky in my last association to see the benefits of focusing on culture firsthand. I was there for 15 years, probably at the beginning of my tenure. My CEO made it a priority number one for him. And so over my time there, I saw how talking about culture, defining your culture, implementing measurements for your culture, and then seeing it in action. We all were kind of rowing in the same boat in terms of where we wanted to take the culture of the organization. We were honest with each other. We had built trust and collaboration. And so as a result of all of that, everyone's work was elevated because we could do our work more collaboratively with more trust. There was less fear around taking risks. We embraced this kind of test and learn culture. You know, when you make a mistake, it's there so you can learn. Just don't keep making that same mistake over and over again. So I really saw firsthand what creating a good culture can do and how it can drive the business and increase member satisfaction. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, I brought that along as well in my new role.
It occurs to me that it might be useful to hear from you how you define culture, because, you know, it's one of those terms that I think we all sort of go, okay, yeah, culture. And but maybe we all have sort of slightly different views of that. Do you have a definition you like to rely on? Or if I put you on the spot and ask for one now, what will you say?
I've been a longtime fan of Jamie Nodder. I know he talks a lot about culture. And so a lot of how I define it is really kind of how he defines it too, right? It's really the behaviors and the actions and the artifacts that are in your environment that people are seeing and feeling on a day-to-day basis. Even if we don't have a defined culture statement, there's a culture there, right? There's signs and signals from how people are behaving as to what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And so I want to be overt with my team about what is acceptable and defining that, things like communication and transparency. It's great to be a subject matter expert, but it's better to share that knowledge and what you know with others around you so that they can contribute and be additive to projects that we're working on together. So that's my definition, and I guess a little bit of a hint of the kind of culture that I'm looking to drive here.
Continuing education is more essential and more strategically valuable than ever. The old model of front-loaded education is no longer viable. Today's learners need relevant and flexible CE to keep pace.
And we have a free resource to help your learning business provide that kind of high-impact learning. The Strategic CE Playbook introduces a practical framework to help you strategically design and deliver continuing education programs that will succeed in today's complex and competitive market.
The playbook focuses on three essential levers: personalization, portfolio thinking, and performance.
To learn more about the three levers and how to use them effectively, get your copy of the Strategic CE Playbook at leadinglearning.com/strategic-CE. I did want to ask about how you think about or describe the culture that you're aiming for with your team at NRECA, and then maybe some of what you are doing or have done to try to create that desired culture, and potentially if it involved a shift, you know, how you were trying to drive that shift as well.
Sure. I think it did involve a little bit of a shift. You know, every time you bring a new leader to a team or even a new colleague to a team, right, that becomes a new team. And we were making a lot of changes. I was making a lot of changes. And so we had to think closely about, okay, how do we want to incorporate these changes? How do we want it to feel? So we had a lot of really transparent, I had to first create this psychological safety among the team and allow them to be able to share, you know, what their idea of a good culture was, the things that weren't working for them, the things that they did like, what made a great day of work for them. And I'm still building it. It's a journey. But having these conversations and really listening to the words and the feelings that they brought up about the kind of culture that they would like to see, we kind of organically backed into what we want as a culture. And it's things like trust, accountability, collaboration, a growth mindset. We are in the learning business, and so we should also be learners. So we try and bring those values, I guess, forth when we have conversations, difficult conversations, to say, hey, I'm trusting you with this, or I'm sharing this with you because we said we wanted to have a culture of transparency or honesty, and working to give people valuable feedback. We're here to help each other.
I'm thinking, too, it might be helpful for listeners to have a sense of the size of the team, you know, as you're talking about kind of, you know, having some of these conversations and arriving together at some of this. So tell us a little bit about the makeup of your team.
Sure. I am lucky, and I consider myself very lucky, to have 34 folks on my team, which is a big team. And I get that, right? I've worked in very small teams before too. So, we have 34 folks, and really we have divided into kind of four groups: our meetings folks, who execute all of our meetings, logistics, work with convention center, et cetera; our program manager folks, who do the content for all of our events. I have a director education group. I mentioned we work with boards of directors. And so these are the folks who are building, you know, day-long classes and content for our boards of directors. And then we have a staff and executive education group who works on the certification programs and content for the staff and executives who work at cooperatives.
One of the things I've heard you talk about before in terms of culture at NRECA was just that part of what hadn't necessarily been a focus for the education group was the recognition of the need for revenue, and that that's been something that you've helped to work on. Will you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. We're a fee-for-service department. And so what that means is, like, membership dues does not cover the costs of the work that we do. In fact, membership dues at our association and maybe others doesn't cover the cost of membership. And so it's critical for departments like mine and others in the organization who can generate revenue to do so to support our government relations activities and other things that we have to do that aren't revenue generating. So when I started here, there is a tremendous focus here at NRECA on service excellence and serving our members. I don't think it's very different than many other associations. But here, sometimes it was at the expense of generating revenue. And so a lot of what I started to do was just talking about the importance of generating revenue, and not necessarily just to make money. We're generating revenue because we want to invest it back into the work that we do, whether specifically for education, training, and events, because we want bigger, bolder speakers, because we want to invest in a different kind of technology platform or implement some technology that costs, you know, some money, or because we want to help the rest of the organization. You know, there's a lot going on with, you know, a new president. And so there's going to be some financial resources that we need to implement in order to educate a whole new staff. And our team can contribute to that. And so it's a lot of what I did was making sure that folks knew on a day-to-day basis or on a weekly basis, monthly basis, how we're generating revenue, where things are coming from, making sure they understood what a P&L was, kind of building some general business acumen, but also this constant drumbeat of we're making money to help our members, to be a stronger organization so that we can continue to help our members. One of my colleagues at one point was like, we've never talked about making money before. But I think, again, it's framing why we're making the money that's important. You know, we're not making the money just to have a huge bottom line at the end of the year. We're making the money so we can do more for our members.
Well, I know you know that we like to talk at Leading Learning in Tagoras about reach, revenue, and impact. And it's very similar to what you're sharing there, where the revenue is a critical part of it, but almost always because it's in service of, you know, helping deliver greater impact or helping have greater reach in terms of who you're serving. And yeah, we see those reach, revenue, and impact as critical for learning businesses. And so if you think kind of near future, and I'm thinking maybe a year, maybe 2 years out, what challenges are you seeing for NRECA in general, maybe in those three areas, maybe in terms of culture, sort of however you want to frame them. But when you think about challenges in that sort of near future, what comes to mind for you?
I think for us, the reach part is critical, right? Because if we can't get that right, building the revenue and having that impact are going to be that much harder. I mentioned earlier hiring folks to work in rural communities and retaining folks in rural communities can be very difficult. And so what we're seeing in our industry is a huge amount of turnover at all roles, and especially in the CEO role, as you know, CEOs who've been at their cooperatives for 20, 30 years are retiring. And so we're working hard and trying to get ahead of being able to reach out to these folks so they know who NRECA is, what we have to offer, because there's so many new staff coming on board in electric cooperatives who might not know who we are. And so we're leaning into our marketing efforts a little more, taking another look at our messaging. For many folks who work in rural communities, maybe they didn't have a pleasant education experience or a higher education experience. They didn't have those opportunities. And so when we're looking to them to invest in education as an adult, you know, how can we tap into what's important for them to make them understand that this education experience is maybe different than what they've experienced in the past, that by investing in us and our education, they're really helping their communities because that's why they've joined their boards or that's why they work at these cooperatives. So really leaning into the reach part, I think, is a big focus for us over the next few years.
I think that I'm hearing in your answer there too, that you think that part of the answer to that challenge around reaching more people is marketing. It's around having that communication piece of it. And then I feel like we're hearing that in some of the data that we collected in a year-end survey from on the leading learning side, that marketing really is kind of a big focus for people. And I think part of it is just that awareness piece, making sure that the people you want to serve are aware of all that you have to offer.
Sure. And I think hand in hand with that is data, right? Whether it's the data of the people that you're trying to reach, right? Do you even know who you're trying to reach, you know, and their demographics and their contact information? And then also data on the other side too, like after you've executed this marketing, what's working, what's not working? Where are you kind of finding opportunities maybe as you look at your data over time of growing audiences and ideas? We looked at data recently and realized we were not really serving the IT community. And with cybersecurity and AI growing, they weren't engaging with us in many of our events. So now we're looking to potentially launch an IT week-long cohort program for IT folks because we looked at the data and saw that it was an underserved audience.
So we talked a little bit about kind of challenges, just the challenges around reaching more of the folks you want to serve. When you think about opportunities, again, sort of that short-ish future year, 2 years out, what are you seeing as major opportunities for NRECA as a learning business, and what are you choosing to focus on out of those opportunities?
I think for us, and this might not be very different from other trade associations or other associations in general, but really we're leaning more into the growth we're already seeing in online learning. And especially within that, self-paced on-demand, we call them SPODs here, but really the opportunity for folks to learn on their own terms, at their own time, in bite-sized chunks, whenever they have time that's available. And we're seeing great success the few times we've dipped our toe into that water. We embrace this test and learn, right? So we've taken some of our courses and made them self-paced on demand. And so we're seeing a lot of growth in that area. So I imagine we'll continue to lean into that online learning going forward, potentially too, making it smaller, more bite-sized. You know, the term webinar, I think, you know, has developed a bad reputation over the last few years, and I get it. So we are launching what we call these online workshops, which in format are really webinars, but we've changed the name of them, and they're very focused on teaching, you know, basic skills like Excel and PowerPoint and how to give a good presentation to small cohorts across our industry, whether it's executive assistants, linemen who are worked many years, you know, restoring power and now find themselves in leadership positions and need to learn some certain skills. So smaller bite-sized pieces of learning as well in these online workshops. Another area where I see a lot of growth for us, we do a lot of events. The ones that seem most successful are the ones that are focused on these kind of more niche, narrowly defined audiences. Like we have an event for communicators. We have an event for, well, not IT folks, but like engineering folks. So when we lean into specific demographics, we seem to be doing really well. When we have events that are trying to appeal to everybody at once under one roof, like our annual meeting, we struggle a little bit with engagement.
Well, those are very interesting trends to think about. I mean, the more niche events that occurred to me that part of that would be just that it's a smaller size, which then seems potentially to open it up better for more peer learning or more interaction among the attendees because it's not overwhelming. You're not necessarily dealing with thousands of people, but maybe under 100, or I don't know exactly how small your niche conferences are.
Well, like 600 or 700 can be our niche conference.
Okay. Yes.
But I think from a content standpoint, it allows us to be more narrowly focused. And you know you have people in a room who are already rowing in the same direction.
And I thought it's interesting, too, with the online workshops, the sort of the rebranding of webinars. I mean, some of what you were talking about in terms of subject areas like Excel and PowerPoint communications, those are areas in which they could go to other providers for. That's not necessarily electric co-ops specific, but maybe it also, again, ties into that sense of at least you're in a room with people who are all rowing in the same direction, as you were saying, or in the same boat, sort of.
Right. And we really do lean into that. I mean, there's a saying in the co-op industry that's like, if you've seen one co-op, you've seen one co-op. And so there's a sense that we are really a unique industry unto ourselves, and it's certainly a unique business model to be a cooperative. And so we do lean into that uniqueness when we offer courses that, as you said, could be found in other places, but they don't have that cooperative twist.
I have a question that we like to ask of all of our podcast guests, which just has to do with your approach to your own lifelong learning. And I know when you were talking about the culture that you're striving for at NRECA, you mentioned growth mindset, and you mentioned that y'all are serving learners, and so you're trying to kind of be good learners yourself. So I'm guessing that you are thoughtful about how you approach your own development. So what are some of your habits or practices or sources when you think about your own growth and development?
You know, Salisa, I know you and I have talked before. We both love books, right? And so to me, that's often my go-to. You know, my last organization, I was like, do we really want to go to a subscription model? So I bought a book about it. Here, you know, I'm struggling with maybe some coaching stuff. So I bought a book about it. So for me, you know, that's a lot of where I find direct resources. But as I think back on my career, where I've really found the most value is in building a peer network of folks who can help me out. So for many years, I was a part of Association Media and Publishing. And so participating in those events and being with those folks, you know, I now have a group of peers to talk to and ask about when I have a question. It's things like PAR, which I'm also a part of, Professionals for Association Revenue, another organization where I can get with some folks and talk about some things that, you know, I might be struggling with. Part of the Tagoras Mastermind group that you and Jeff host as well, which has been a great resource to use as, you know, one is therapy, right? To talk about, you know, things that are giving you pain, but also ways to really get solutions and ideas from folks who are like you. Sometimes you can't talk to your direct reports or maybe other folks in your organization because they're not in the education space with you, but building that community of folks has really helped me with my lifelong learning.
So we believe in the power of reflection. And one of the things that we like to help people do with the podcast is think about what are some of the takeaways. So if you're thinking about our conversation, you know, are there 1, 2, 3 points that you're sort of hoping people might sort of walk away either to think about or to maybe do something with?
Sure. I guess the first one we talked a lot about was culture, right? I would say don't sleep on culture. For me, it's the grease for the wheels, right? If you can get that right and continue down that lifelong, and it is a lifelong journey of building that culture within your organization, it's going to make reach, revenue, and impact and the other work that you do a lot easier and a lot more enjoyable. I would also say embrace this test and learn mindset. Try something. I mean, you don't want to just try every idea that you have, but if you vetted an idea and you really want to get it launched, just try it, right? Do it once. You don't have to commit to an event that goes forever and ever, right? Just do it for 1 year. See how it works. What did you learn? And if you want to do it again in the future. And lastly, I would say just remember that we are a learning business, right? That means we want to teach education and learning to our members, but we also want to generate revenue from that as well. And those two things are not exclusive of each other. So I would definitely lean into that as well.
Not done just yet. Keep listening for our recap.
At leadinglearning.com/episode445, you'll find show notes, a transcript, options for subscribing to the podcast, and links to the NRECA website, and to connect with Aaron on LinkedIn.
And if you enjoy the Leading Learning podcast, we'd love for you to share an episode on LinkedIn and tag a colleague or two who you think would benefit from listening.
So, Jeff, when you think about the conversation with Aaron, what are you taking away?
Well, Erin herself did such a nice job of capturing takeaways at the end, and those really landed with me. Not sleeping on culture, for example, is just solid, good advice. Erin mentioned Jamie Nodder, and we know his and Maddie Grant's work on culture as well. In fact, we had Jamie talk about culture at a Leading Learning pre-event we co-located with PAR's Rev Up Conference, and Erin was there. And one of the things that Jamie says is that, people think changing culture is hard, but it's really not. There are just certain things you have to do.
And I think that ties right into Aaron's second takeaway around embracing a test and learn mindset, right? Just doing some things means you need to try some things and you need to learn from what you're trying out. And all of that is part of culture too. You have to create the psychological safety that allows for potential failure as long as learning happens as part of whatever failure might come about.
Right. And then her last point around being honest about being in the business of learning. Well, that's like music to my ears. Like Aaron, I know and see the importance of revenue in what learning businesses do. And that's, not all about profit at the expense of mission. It's about revenue in service of mission and revenue driving greater reach and impact.
So that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.